Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear FIGS. Because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts, and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your FIGS? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast? Wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.
All right, let's get to it today. We've got a very busy show. I want to get to the stimulus battle. That's the first on the rundown today. And Congress is back this morning, if you can believe that. And so right now a battle is showing up between progressives and moderate Democrats, and the future of the stimulus basically hangs in the balance. You know, what is going to happen for you? Will we see additional checks? And I think this is a big question as part of that $3.5 trillion reconciliation package. Remember, that's step two in this process. Step one is that bipartisan, we're all kumbaya together, Republicans and Democrats. We came together for that $1 trillion bipartisan kumbaya package, right? Which was all a big wet kiss to business and to Wall Street, right? That's why they were able to come together in agreement on that. So the reason that Nancy Pelosi now has called off, she has called off the summer break and brought these guys back to Washington. Said its summer vacation is over and Nancy Pelosi appears ready to work for the American people. And at this moment, early Monday morning, the latest news out of Washington this morning is that the House Democratic leadership does not have the enough votes to pass their budget resolution. Does not. So Democrats don't have the votes for the budget, the passage of which would unlock the bulk of what President Biden wants to do domestically, his human infrastructure package, you know, the $3.5 trillion package. So remember, we've had like 2 weeks of like back to back and back and forth bickering that brought Pelosi and a group of House Democratic moderates out. You know, you have Representative Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey, Kurt Schrader of Oregon, Jared Golden of Maine, and Ed Case of Hawaii. They've had quite a standoff. That's because these nine moderates are demanding a vote on this $1 trillion infrastructure package. They want the Senate infrastructure bill, and they want to vote on it before they do any of this budget resolution reconciliation thing. Why? Why do you think this is? They're moderate Democrats. Why? Because they know that it's very unlikely that they're going to actually get this other budget resolution through, the one that progressives want. So once again, it's back to like March of 2020, right? When we have these stimulus plans in place, that some that would really help Wall Street and others that would help the American people, we'll hold off on the ones that will help the American people in favor of passing the ones that will help Wall Street. So these moderate nine Democrats, of course, want this. That's exactly what they want, right? Like, it should be a shock to any of us.
Right. That's like, people are always like, why are you so cynical all the time? It's like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Like, how many times do we have to be fooled before we're all cynical about everything that they say? Like, I don't believe a word they say till I see it actually on paper and moving down the road. Because they say all this stuff to get us all up in arms against each other or get us excited. And they tell us it's going to have all this wonderful stuff in it that's going to help your life and make it so much better. And then you see the final thing and it's like, okay, it all went to Wall Street and we got, nothing. Again.
Yeah. And, you know, infrastructure, all of these like private contractors who will benefit off of like scanners at airports, you know, road construction. No wonder they're all in support of this crap. Of course, they want this thing passed first. Pelosi, though, to her credit, hasn't blinked yet. Like, she wants the $3.5 trillion and that huge beyond just the, roads and bridges stuff. Like, she's on board with Biden on this, which means she's also on board with progressives on this. And, you know, you might be cynical at home right now. You might be thinking this is, you know, they're all going to cave and not so fast. Not so fast. Because what this would mean for her is that she basically gives up power. And if you're betting on the Gottheimer crew, or you, who are you going to bet with? Let me just ask you this. Who are you going to bet for right now? Are you going to bet on Pelosi, who has 20 years of leadership experience with an entrenched group of people that always, she always manages to get her way, always manages to figure things out? Like, are you going to bet against her? Lover or hater? I don't care how you come down on her politically. Are you going to bet against that? Or are you going to bet in favor of Gottheimer out of New Jersey? Who's going to fold? My money is on Pelosi in this. My money's on Pelosi. It's a risky bet, though, right?
And a bunch of other people's money must be on Pelosi, too, if she's on board for this. We got to look at what's in this for her, because there's something in this for her.
Well, clearly, $3.5 trillion is going to be a windfall. I mean, it's going to be an absolute windfall, right? But there's a lot of key things that she's in support of, particularly on education front. So we'll see. I mean, look, I don't want to be too cynical here, but what I will say is that Gottheimer and this group of moderate Democrats, we know that they're in favor of the wealthy. This was the same group that came out against the salt tax, right? They're like, no, 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 the state and local tax deductions, we got to put that back in because all of our rich constituents in New Jersey now can't lay claim to their property taxes the same way that they can at the federal level. Like, they are not able to take, so they can't have these extra deductions. So this is really hurting our wealthy mansion owners in New Jersey.
Can you explain Gottheimer a little bit more? Some people don't understand.
Well, New Jersey Representative Gottheimer. Okay, so he's been a moderate Democrat. He's one of these guys who basically is pushing for, he had pushed for the removal of Trump's salt tax deduction elimination during the Trump tax cuts. He wanted that put back in. Progressive Democrats were like, and Bernie Sanders were like, really? This is what you're fighting for in this $1.9 trillion package back in March? You want us to put in tax deductions again for the rich? That's the thing you're fighting for? So that's what these moderate Democrats have been fighting for, this group of nine. You might as well just see them lined up with Wall Street and the wealthy. That's really who they are. That's who they are. So key members of the moderate crew told Punchbowl News on last night that they won't under any circumstances back down against Nancy Pelosi. So now we've got this like, dun, 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 dun.
How come we've not heard this name along with Manchin and Sinema this whole time?
Well, oddly, I mean, on the you know, he's in the House of Representatives, so you have that side of things. But they're not. Manchin has been quiet on the salt deduction. Kyrsten Sinema has been quiet on that as well, because it really doesn't affect their states. When you have New Jersey, it really affected New Jersey. It affected New York. It affected Connecticut. All of these wealthy Democrats that live in that corridor, that was the group. You even had upstate New York, Sousa, and others. You had these moderate Democrats who were helping the wealthy. So that's how this all panned out. But they got together, Gottheimer and others, decided to write an opinion piece. And in the Washington Post last night said, let's take the win. Let's do infrastructure first. And among their arguments are this. Time kills deals. And this is an old business saying and the essence of why we are pushing to get the bipartisan infrastructure bill through Congress and immediately to President Biden's desk, as the president himself requested the day after it passed the Senate. The challenge we face right now is that there's a standoff with some of our colleagues who have decided to hold the infrastructure bill hostage for months. And he's referring to people like AOC and other progressive Democrats. Or they plan to kill it altogether if they don't get what they want in the next bill, a largely undefined $3.5 trillion reconciliation package. While we have concerns about the level of spending and potential revenue raisers, we are open to immediate consideration of that package. All right. So what they're saying is, our progressives who want things to actually help human beings, like, just, we'll get to it. We promise, fingers crossed behind my back. Let's just pass this other one first. And what AOC and Bernie Sanders and others are saying is, no, no, no. Like, we will not pass this first thing until you agree to the second thing. Otherwise, we know how it goes in Washington. You pay lip service that you're actually going to get to the stuff that helps human beings, and you don't. So good for them. Good for them. And yes, let's be cynical. I'm sure there's plenty of pork that's going to be handed out all over the United States of America in that package.
Yep. All I am thinking is I'll believe it when I see it.
You'll believe the package being passed?
I'll believe anything positive when I see it. This is the normal lip service that we always get just before they vote and take out everything for us and add all the stuff for their buddies. This is the moment like, okay, we're coming forward. Here we are. We're going to do this. We're fighting for you. Oh, wait. The Republicans pulled this out. They're pulling this out. Like,
see, I'm fine. I'm fine with pork. I'm absolutely fine with pork and other types of meat in these bills. Because I always say this, you know, if a bridge gets built and some senator wants to put his or her name on it, but at the same time, they also fix the lead pipes and the waterway, but we had to deal with them getting a bridge with their name on it, fine, give me the bridge, which we probably needed anyway. But at least we got rid of the lead pipes.
Yeah, like, but the thing is, when they allow this pork, like, if you look at the CARES Act, we got, I don't remember what we got in the CARES Act, but companies got $5 trillion. So it's like, all of it was pork. So I would say I'm okay with pork if this pork is the smallest percentage so that they can just get a little bit of what they want and give us a lot of what we want. But what happens is they give a lot to what they want and very, very, very little, if anything, to what we want or need. So, you know, I'm okay with pork if it pushes something down the road, but doesn't, like, it's not the whole entire thing. Because, like, that CARES Act was way out of balance to big corporations. They got $5 trillion. And we're sitting here arguing about us getting potentially three.
Right. Yeah. So that's their opinion piece. And that's what they want. They say, like, let's move this thing forward. You know, it's quite tricky. It's this huge, you know, tricky situation for Representative Gottheimer and their crew, because if they fold right here, the group won't be taken seriously in any future demands, right? My money is on them folding. But if they do hold the line, like, you know, like Braveheart, hold, they're going to be some of the party who will blame them for delaying the entire Biden agenda. Pelosi and her top leadership team, the Democratic caucus, have been in leadership for nearly two decades. They're going to have their powers tested. So real question is going to, you know, today is just a procedural vote, and then tomorrow the real battle begins. So we'll have full coverage on that part of the stimulus tomorrow. But we also still have more on the stimulus this morning in $1,000 checks that are now hitting bank accounts. How many of you have started to receive these $1,000 checks? Let me know in the chat if you are one of the people that has.
What does that mean? Stimulus checks worth up to $1,000? That sounds like some kind of sweepstakes.
All right. Did you get one that's worth $1,000? If you're lucky, well, it depends on your state. They're being sent out, $1,000 checks are being sent out to teachers and other key workers, other frontline workers and other key workers. So it's really a grab bag right now as to who's getting these $1,000 stimulus checks. And some are saying, hey, this extra cash is being seen as a thank you gesture. But others are saying, wait a minute, why is that person? There are people on... that are complaining about this, saying, well, why should teachers get $1,000 when other people should also get $1,000? Like this mom says, all this look,
child tax credit stuff. It's like, what you want to further divide people. What you're doing is you're dividing people again to where it's like, why are you getting money and I'm not? I'm struggling. Like this person might not need it as bad as this person, like their neighbor. And it's like, you're causing a rift in the whole country if you keep doing stuff like this.
Yeah, because you know that's how the government loves to do things, right? They love to say, okay, well, you worked at a grocery store, but you're a female, so then you probably don't deserve a stimulus check. Or are you elderly and you live in this zone? Like, that's how we do things. Like, do you live in an opportunity zone? Like, and you're elderly and you haven't filed income taxes for the last 2 years, then you qualify. It's always, you know, it's always broken down like this. Some parents appear to be slightly skeptical about giving teachers a cash boost. Mom, Lindsay Nofeld of Berkeley, said the stimulus cash should be used to help boost attainment levels in math and science. She told the Wall Street Journal, I'm the last person to say don't pay teachers. However, it should come from the appropriate money. So in Florida, 170,000 teachers are about to receive a $1,000 payment in their mailboxes in the coming weeks. Do we have any educators here from Florida? The payments, which are due to start, be sent out later this summer, and you already starting this week, $101 billion that was passed in the state law by Governor DeSantis. The state budget also set aside $400 million to pay bonuses. Another one is Michigan. Teachers in Michigan are going to receive $500, so not as good as Florida. $500 is part of their Michigan Classroom Heroes grants.
Well, and they haven't even been teaching during the pandemic, really. I mean, some of them, like, I don't know. I just, I am all for people getting help. I really am. I'm all for teachers getting help. I think teachers are way underpaid. I think it's something that, that they should be one of the highest paid earners in this country, I believe. Yeah, if they're properly educating kids, I believe. But anyway, like, I just don't agree with this thinking, because the thing is, they always make it really hard to qualify, and then you got to figure out how you qualify, and then they're sending money to people with kids and people not people without kids, like we don't need it too. I'm not saying we as in me, I'm fine, but there are a lot of people that really need something right now and they're not getting it. And so it just seems like it's by design. They just try to make this so hard and keep us divided. And when does it not feel like this is intentional?
Well, and it's intentional at the federal level, right? Let's be honest. Like, there's no additional stimulus right now at the federal level. And so these states, they all have this sort of hodgepodge approach, unfortunately, right? So California is giving a 3.5% bonus to teachers. Lawmakers in Georgia are signing off on $1,000 checks, which will cover every teacher and member of staff. Bus drivers are also getting money, and canteen staff, those who are canteen staff, kitchen staff, canteen. I haven't heard that as a phrase, a canteen staff.
I mean, I would say that would be bars and restaurants, right?
Or lunch. I mean, it's part of this, the school system. So,
I
would think canteen staff, right? That would be
the lunch lady.
Lunchroom. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, this is what you have. You have these different cities getting this. DeSantis said, we know the pandemic put an awful lot of strain on our first responders, EMTs, sworn law enforcement, firefighters, and so we believe we should recognize their sacrifice over the last year.
I'm all about thanking them for their sacrifice, but we've all been, this is a pandemic. We have all been put through a lot. I mean, there's people that can't, look at how many people are behind on their rent and facing homelessness.
Right.
What about those people? Their sacrifice. They're sacrificing everything. They might end up on the street.
Right.
So again, I'm all for taking care of first responders and thanking them for their service and everything that they've done. But we've all been through this, and we've all done this together, and we should all be getting help.
New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania still haven't introduced any legislation on that. Earlier this month, Hawaii vetoed a proposal that would have sent teachers up to $2,200 in extra cash. There's your Hawaiian news of the day. And the White House has not introduced any legislation as well. So, you know, it's sort of it's total hodgepodge. I mean, it really is. I mean, you've got states that are reusing some of their budget right now and saying, we're going to use some of this leftover stimulus money that's been allocated for certain reasons. We're going to use that and just dole it out to teachers. And other people are sitting there saying, wait a second, I can't pay my bills. Like, why are we just, I mean, again, we're not saying denigrating teachers in this. They should absolutely, first of all, they should have been given hazard pay, that they should get frontline workers pay. I mean, they were teaching in conditions where, horrible conditions, you know, and then you had obviously the difficulty of trying to teach children over Zoom classes, and then you had all of the frontline workers who were at the school still serving out the school lunches. So kids pulling up to the school, families pulling up to the school where they're still serving the lunches to kids. You know, I mean, and the frontline workers, the hazard pay, all the EMTs, grocery store attendants, people who are still providing food. All, I mean, across the board, the richest country in the world, we couldn't do it.
Mark Sparks is saying, exactly, David, I'm an essential, quote unquote, essential worker in security and guest teacher with teaching certificate, and I have got zero working all throughout this mess.
That's amazing. And Mark, were you in classrooms at the time? I mean, I assume you were, right? You were you had to be frontline. And I mean, all through this last year with kids, you know, they're in masks. So you're in that room trying to teach our, you know, future of our country. And, yeah, Mark says, yeah, yes, Clayton, that's what happened. What happened to hazard pay that I was eligible for? Exactly. I mean, richest country in the world, richest country in the world. This is how we treat people. Unbelievable. We've got some new data on unemployment this morning I want to get to and how this relates to this stimulus. We'll get there in a second. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Babbel. I can't even say Babbel this morning. Maybe I need Babbel to learn how to speak English for crying out loud. Babbel is a fantastic way to learn language. You know, my mom was just joining us, just visiting us. We told her, you got to get a Babbel subscription, Mom. Just for simple phrases, you know, just going out to dinner, just going to the grocery store. You know, when you're traveling to a destination where you don't know the language, it can be challenging to accomplish even the simplest of tasks. You know, like, I just need to know where the bathroom is, you know? ¿Dónde fica la casa de baño? Like, I just need to know where the bathroom is. What if that person doesn't speak English, you know? Thankfully, there's Babbel, the number one selling language learning app. Through Babbel's bite-sized lessons, you'll learn a new language skill that you can actually use in the real world, from greetings, menus, and directions to gaining a deeper understanding of the culture. Babbel is a travel essential. They've got 15-minute lessons that make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. Other language learning apps use AI for the lessons plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 different language experts. Really fantastic. You can study from 14 different languages, Spanish, French, Italian, German, Portuguese. But Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you improve your pronunciation and accent. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. You can even access their podcasts, their games, their videos, stories, and live classes, all right on your phone. So right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to Babbel.com and use promo code INVEST. That's Babbel.com, code INVEST. Babbel, language for life. Our thanks to them. Thank you, Babbel. So I got some new unemployment data out this morning. You know the talking point over the past few months, right? If you've put on CNBC or any of the other like conservative business media, they've all been telling us, right, that, hey, you are lazy. You know, if we cut off these unemployment benefits, you'll go back to work and these businesses that can continue to pay you $12 an hour and walk all over you and not pay you benefits. It's just that you're lazy. You just want these unemployment benefits. So that's why you're staying home. Well, it was amazing this morning to see Bloomberg News. Actually, their reporters were conciliatory and admitting, wow, the data now shows something different. Yeah, Bloomberg was admitting fault. And wow, we got this wrong. Turns out that there's no evidence under new data that was just released on Friday by the government. State cuts in jobless aid have little effect on unemployment. Turns out, only 8 of the 26 states that cut off federal jobless benefits early saw a statistically significant drop in unemployment in July. You know what statistically significant means, right? When you've got a poll that shows like Hillary Clinton is like at 42% and Donald Trump is at like 41% in the polls, and the margin of error is like 3, guess what? That means that they're statistically tied. So there was virtually nothing that happened as a result of this. So I'll repeat. Only 8 of the 26 states that cut off federal jobless benefits early saw a statistically significant drop in unemployment in July, undermining a key Republican argument for ending the enhanced aid. 9 states and the District of Columbia did not end the benefits. They also saw statistically significant declines in unemployment, muddying the waters as economists and policymakers search for any indication that the decision by some governors to discontinue emergency unemployment insurance before its September 6th expiration date might have had broader ramifications for the labor market. You know what actually happened, though? This is really surprising. So what do you think? I'm just curious. I'll throw this out there. I'd love to hear your thoughts in the chat. What do you actually think happened? We'll do this as a test. I'll quiz you first, David. What do you think actually happened? So it didn't materially affect going back to work. They cut off unemployment, okay, to these people who were making low wages anyway. Okay, they cut off unemployment. They did not go back to that crappy job. What did they do instead? What actually happened?
They probably became entrepreneurs and started their own Etsy shops or something.
Some did. Some did. But over...
They looked for better, like maybe educated themselves, learned a new skill through Skillshare or something like that to do something new.
Some did. Yes, that was definitely the result of it. Some people improved their skills and got higher pay because they were able to spend that time and educate themselves. But the correct answer is that overwhelmingly, people just saved less money and ate into their savings to live. Overwhelmingly, people basically didn't put money into the economy is what happened.
So they basically did what the rich do.
No trickle down in money into the economy.
Yeah, they sat on it.
So they just sat on this money, but they didn't even use it, or they spent it out of their savings to live. But guess what? That meant that they didn't put it into the economy. They simply just did not spend money. They didn't go to the grocery store. They spent less on food. They bought less items for their family. They didn't put their kid in that summer camp that they might have otherwise been able to. All of it, they reduced. So it's going to be interesting to see the data from like the final data from August. Like, what does it look like now that we fully cut off unemployment benefits? And it turns out that the answer was that these people did not go back to work. It was basically what Laura Ingraham was calling for, which is like fear. You know, like let them just go hungry.
Hunger
is a powerful motivator, she said, right? Someone on my YouTube channel left a comment on that video. We published that Laura Ingraham video separately, and this person said, Clayton, you know that Laura Ingraham is right. That what she's saying is true. That these people, they should be making, they're unskilled, they should be making $15 an hour. What sort of incentives do you want them to have? My thought is, well, how about a living wage, one that's not at a poverty level? What do you think about that? The guy that left me the comment was like in a little bow tie. I'm sure he's like, you know nothing of the economy. Okay.
Yeah, so, how dare people actually want to be able to pay their rent and survive on one income?
It turns out, little buddy, you're wrong. Turns out you're wrong. I do know something of the economy. It turns out the new data backs me up on this.
So loosen your bow tie, man.
Yeah. Found that for every 8 workers who lost their job benefits, only one had found a job by August. Any additional earnings accounted for just 7% of lost benefits. At the same time, spending dropped sharply, 20%. 20% spending drop.
What really irritates me is, you know what? I understand there's going to always be a handful of people that take advantage of any system you put in place. There will always be that percentage of people. But they try so hard, like when they're trying to pass the stimulus. We can't pass the stimulus because we can't have people saving money. We can't have anybody using this money to not just like instantly put it, like they have to be struggling. Like it has to be, they have a zero bank account and we're going to bring it to a thousand positive. They can't have a $5,000 bank account and we're going to make it $7,000 positive. That can't happen. So they tried to do all of these things to keep that from happening. But I would be okay if everybody would have been helped through the pandemic, and even some people would have taken advantage of the system. I'm fine with that because you'll help more people that way.
Exactly. And I'm fine with the few rotten apples. You know, there are a few rotten apples that spoil it for us. Fine.
Yeah. It's like,
but don't spoil it for the whole thing.
I go to the grocery store and I literally buy a bag of apples every week. And sometimes there are a couple that are bruised or whatever. I just throw them away and it's no big deal. I don't go to the grocery store and be like, you gave me a bad apple. I'm never buying apples here again. This is so stupid. Like it happens. You're going to have some bad apples, but it's nothing to get upset about. This, like, you still got a whole bag of great apples.
So you don't treat it like Kramer on Seinfeld when he gets the bad peach and he goes back, you know. I bought a bad peach. He's like, what do I can do? You know, he goes, you sell me the fruit.
I mean, if I bought one and it was bad, maybe I'd go back, but right. I buy a whole bag. And
I bought
like
one
out of
one peach in here and, you know, no, a bag, I get it. And Steve Vanderford says, hunger is a terrible motivator. You lack energy to work, which creates anger. Hunger mostly leads to revolts or leaving, yeah, or dying, or lethargy and sickness.
They're not hungry, they're hangry. I mean, the thing is, think about this. If you ever in your life are starving, like literally starving, you will resort to any means possible to eat, which means crime, which means all kinds of things. Like, there, you think that a dad is going to let his kids starve? No, they're going to do whatever they have to do, which means going into grocery stores and looting or whatever they have to do to feed those kids. So you don't put people in a position to have to do that. Even if they are taking advantage of a system, you at least keep them in a situation where it doesn't have to get worse than what it already is.
Yeah, and this all really just demonstrates the importance overall of reforming unemployment insurance. I mean, this crisis exacerbated sort of these existing inequities in our system, right? I mean, you had all of these under-resourced state agencies. You had a total patchwork of programs and policies that were a total mess. You had certain states that just didn't have the computers and software to even be able to get this stuff out to people. And that the fact that the United States government, the federal government, wanted to give you an additional $300 a month, and then you had these Republican governors saying, no, they don't need it. They're just lazy. They got to get back to work. Wait a minute, but that's like the federal government is giving it to us and you're blocking it? So you're not going to give it to us, but the federal government, which is over you, is giving it to us, but you're blocking it. Let me just understand that. Yes, I am. I'm blocking it because you're lazy. You need to get back to work.
And then at the end of the year, they show a surplus.
Right. Yeah, we'll pass all these like sort of crony projects. You know, we'll get that. We'll pass all that kind of stuff. We have a big surplus now. I mean, and you know, the sad part is that the premature cutoff had a disproportionate impact on Black and Latino workers, according to some economists. They said that it could have lasting repercussions over the 17 million workers who applied for and received unemployment benefits between January and May. 21% were Latino. 18% were Black. That's greater than their respective shares of the overall workforce. But 18% of employees in 2020 were Latino, while 12% were Black. You know, and this could set families back an entire generation. Because, hey, we haven't even talked about the eviction moratorium, which we'll get to a little bit later in the show. So I'm unemployed. The company, you know, I can't afford to go back to work right now because my daughter is home from school and I need to take care of because her school's closed or the daycare is closed. So I can't go to my $15 or $12 an hour job that they don't pay me benefits. I'm not taken care of. So I've got to stay home and take care of my child.
Well, and that's the thing. It really pisses me off that people are like, that person, you know, you've got a job and you're not going there. You're just lazy. But think about this for one second. You're going to a job that does not help you even pay your bills. It doesn't even help you pay your complete rent. What does it do? It just gives you a little bit of money to what? To maybe eat for a little while or something like that. But it doesn't give you any way to get ahead. We should be able to go to work and get ahead in this country. And even if it's this incrementally ahead, even if it's this much. But what happens is you have people that are at a negative balance every single month. No fault of their own. They're trying. They're not living in these lavish lifestyles and stuff. They're trying to survive. So they need to have some kind of wage where they can do that.
Right. And the cost of things has gone up. So it's this perpetual circle for low-income Americans. Think about this. So you work at some... I had a viewer who wrote me after last Friday's show about McDonald's. You know, look, I used to work at McDonald's, and we were asking the question last week about these low-wage workers and what exactly are they paid, you know, and what are the managers paid at a McDonald's? Turns out at McDonald's, they're paid $12 an hour for a manager. $12 an hour as a manager of people. And then you have, you know, then the people under them and the manager at the McDonald's he was working at was making $9 an hour, $8 or $9 an hour. So $12 to manage people, $8 or $9 under that. So that's a poverty wage. Okay.
Well,
what can you afford with that? You can afford exactly what you see on your screen here. This kind of food.
And people are saying in the chat, like, in most places, if you have children and you work for that wage, you can't afford daycare because daycare is basically like another rent payment in most places.
You know, you look at a price of broccoli. I'm just doing some research here on like how much does broccoli cost right now. I mean, of course, the price of things is going up, right? I mean, broccoli, you know, average price for a kilo or per a pound of broccoli, $2 a pound, basically. And it's gone up again. So $2 a pound for broccoli. You can get a burger for like a dollar, right? So people in this cycle of poverty continue to like funnel money into that garbage food because that's all they can afford, this highly processed crap. And we wonder why we're overweight and we have diabetes out the ass in the United States. And you know, you can't afford like actually healthy food for your family because that's more expensive. And the government subsidizes this crap. Government subsidizes, you know, high fructose corn syrup and this crap. So, you know, this idea that you're just lazy. No, maybe you want to try to figure out a better way for your family. How, you know, what can you do to help your family? And you've got you're a single mom. You're trying to take care of your daughter whose daycare is closed. What are you going to do? Hire a babysitter so you can go to the job at McDonald's?
Well, and also just think of like, let's say there was a system, okay? Let's say the unemployment system, you know, there were some people taking advantage of it, but they were making more than that they would make in a job and they were actually able to buy the food to put food on their kids' table and everything like that. And they're a little bit happier, but they're slightly taking advantage of a system. Who cares? You know, who cares? Because like, I think in this country, everybody deserves a livable wage where they can be happy. And you know, we're arguing about a $15 minimum wage. But in like New York, LA, bigger cities, Portland, that's not even enough. You would need like $25, $30 an hour even to live in these places. If you have kids and need daycare and stuff like that, unless you live on like the outskirts, like near impoverished areas and stuff like that, you know? So yeah. It's like, I don't know. I just don't understand. Like, and I understand people going after the government for this, but where they need to really be hitting these companies is the companies. People need to protest at McDonald's, not to the federal government, but to McDonald's to raise their wages because that company is showing, like these companies show billions of profits. So these CEOs and executives that own these companies are sitting there on their yachts and they're watching their employees struggle. They're watching their employees who can't afford to even pay rent. And what are they doing? Nothing. They're Nothing. Laughing about it. They don't care.
No, and you know, and the business, you know, We are run in the United States by a corporatocracy, right? It's run by businesses. We are not a democracy. We are not a republic. We are a corporatocracy. Our United States government is run by Wall Street and big businesses. And all of these members of Congress, as we highlighted last week here on the show, how many of them are paid, bought and sold and paid for by defense contractors, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, getting money from Google and big tech and McDonald's and contributions, and because it furthers this system.
Well, and that
just continues to perpetuate this system.
When the pandemic first hit, what is the first thing they did? The first thing they did was take care of the defense contractors and the big businesses. It was basically like another 2008. They bailed out all these big companies that didn't need it. They made sure all the war contractors were taken care of, and then they decided to move on to us during a pandemic.
Sick. That's their priority. That's their priority. Yeah. So unemployment benefits set to expire, set to run out. And now we have the data. So if you have any of your Republican uncles and talking points coming out telling you that, and moderate Democrats too. I mean, we had like people like Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema and others saying, you know, we need to stop these unemployment benefits because, you know, we have businesses that want to hire and people are just staying home. Oh, turns out that's not the reason. So you cut off these unemployment benefits at the state level and people just spent less, food insecurity. Now they have less money. They can't pay for their daycare for their children. The daycare is still closed. Now we see this massive surge in child cases of COVID. So we're going to start to clamp down again on schools and daycare and kindergarten centers and all of that. How's a person supposed to go back and try to support themselves on $15, $10 an hour? Someone said right now, just that there's a $10 an hour minimum wage at McDonald's. That's what they're hiring for right now, $10. So We got more news to get to here on the show. Billy Stillman says, Clayton, there are fires burning up in Cali. Can you please get info for me? I haven't been following. I mean, I've got family in California, but it's not really part of our show here. But it's been awful. It's dry. And California is like a tinder. Where are you up? You're up in Washington State. Has it been awful there? Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, we hit like 100, 200 air quality warnings a couple times, but it's clearing up again now.
Yeah, it's been pretty bad. I have friends out in California that are just like, you have to have the air filters on nonstop because it's just been brutal.
We each have one in our room that we run. So,
yeah. So we'll, sorry about that, Billy. Please stay safe and check your local radio news for that, because you're going to have more information about that stuff, which is moving very quickly, by the way. That's scary. We're going to get to Bitcoin here in a second. Actually, let's do it right now. So let's look at these Bitcoin prices. A couple of big news stories on Bitcoin. Of course, I've got the chart over me here. So PayPal, the multi-million dollar payment processor, announced the expansion of its cryptocurrency-based services to the UK starting this week, according to reports. So Bitcoin, the people's currency, up to 50,000 right now, 50,200. It was at 50,400 just a short time ago. And I'm making the case this morning that, you know, when you see the U.S., I've been looking at data all weekend about the U.S. dollar and some really troubling data about the credit markets, which I'm going to release a video later today on. I'm going to shoot it. If my voice holds up, I'm feeling a little sick today, but I'm looking at the credit markets and spent quite a bit of time this weekend analyzing how the U.S. dollar and how the stock market is really like sitting there on a heyday right now. It's like it's doing really well, but that's about to all change very shortly. Once you understand what the Federal Reserve is doing and the amount of money that it is now pulling out of the stock market away from the banks, you know, it's interesting to see. It's the sort of reverse repo market which is happening. I'll go deeper into it in a video later, so don't want to get too much of a tangent there. But suffice it to say that where are you going to put your money? When fiat currency collapses, where are people putting their money? And it turns out they're putting it into crypto, and they're doing it in a much bigger way than we had even anticipated, breaking new records with the amount of liquidity in the crypto markets now. And so this morning we see from PayPal saying, you know what, we think that this is a great opportunity, launching a crypto service in the UK. They're allowed, you're going to be able to, it's similar to the one that's available in the United States. It will allow UK citizens to purchase 4 cryptocurrencies from its platform: Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, and Litecoin. I'm sure more to come. I'm sure Doge and other ones will also be popping up there shortly. But this is, it's been pretty exciting. So we're looking at some of the other alternative coins and a lot of the platforms that are really dependent on this infrastructure and all seeing a big surge. So again, Bitcoin passing the $50,000 mark, exciting. And well, I think... Yeah.
Quick question, just from a ignorant standpoint here. Let's say the dollar does, let's say in 2 years, we'll give it, the dollar just crashes because they stop taking it for oil. China and Russia team up. They stop taking the dollar as the petrodollar, right? So our dollar crashes. We're stuck with crypto. There's no infrastructure around buying food, groceries, anything to where we could just openly trade Bitcoin out in the regular market. So how would that work? Like, how is that beneficial to us if there's no infrastructure in place yet?
Well, that's why there's so many questions as to what the United States is going to do. All you need to do is look in 17 days, El Salvador accepts Bitcoin as a legal tender. 17 days left until El Salvador officially recognizes Bitcoin as legal tender. What they did, and what I think the United States will have to do, is to eliminate the tax on Bitcoin. So that when it's treated as property, so you're able to buy groceries there with Bitcoin. You're able to buy, gasoline with Bitcoin. And what El Salvador is doing is,
Michael Saylor say that it's a bad idea to buy things with.
Well, he sees it
because you would be forced to.
No, he sees it as an ultimate store of value. And so we're in an interesting nexus point right now, because Bitcoin as a store of value, as property, is arguably perhaps the greatest store of value we've ever seen, even better than gold and real estate. That's what Michael Saylor would argue. And I'm not ready to go that far yet. I own real estate, I own gold and silver, but I also own Bitcoin. And I just stay away from the government dollar, the fiat currency, stay away from the stock market for long-term holds. I mean, I've got a few companies that I have long-term, like Apple, but that's really it. Most of the time, if I'm day trading, that's the only reason I'm touching the stock market, is to make quick profits that I turn into long-term assets, long-term buy and hold assets that produce cash flow and a store of value. So to answer your question, yes, using Bitcoin, because it's property, it's by our U.S. government, it's considered property. If you're using it as a transaction, then that is considered property, and you'd have to pay a tax on that, right? Anytime you sell property. With other cryptocurrencies like Dogecoin, et cetera, that's where we could see a big opportunity here. Like, you know, keep your Bitcoin. Don't ever sell your Bitcoin. Use that as property. And then use Dogecoin or some other coin like Shiba Coin as your currency. And so I think we're going to see how this all shakes out over the next year or two. But right now, Bitcoin is the leader in this. And if countries are going to say, we're not going to treat it as property, we're not going to tax it as property, so feel free. You could go to run five different errands today, pay for your dry cleaning with it, you know, pay for your pizzas with it, and we're not going to charge you each time a tax that you use it as a transaction. And it'll be interesting to see what the U.S. government does on this. Hmm. But for now, $50,000 Bitcoin, and I think there's an argument to be made by the end of the week, we could see Bitcoin pushing towards $60,000. Because once it hits this 50,000 level, it's not going to hang out at 50. It'll be at, it might even be by the end of the day, might it be at 51, 52, and then maybe by the end of the week, we'll see it pushing back towards 60 again.
Sounds like this would be a really good time for any really smart entrepreneurs that are into coding or something like that to figure out some sort of system like a Square or something like that to pull in crypto and convert it to real money somehow, to convert it to a card of some kind.
Well, and that's what a lot of these guys are doing on the blockchain right now. I mean, I've had deep interviews here on the channel about companies that are actually doing that right now. And some of these alternative coins and some of these DeFi platforms that are doing that. They're basically creating like a Binance card so you can use out of your digital wallet and do your transactions that way. In the same way that, you know, we've seen Square. I mean, we see where Square is going, right? That's what Jack Dorsey sees, I think, as his legacy is Square. What can he do on a cryptocurrency front that allows you to use cryptocurrency for any transaction using your Square account? So I don't know. It's an interesting time. It'll be interesting to see which big ones sort of emerge, where everyone will be using their digital wallets now for these transactions. Be interesting to watch all of this, though.
Yeah, it is interesting because I see it as a, you know, if the reason that we are screwed as often as we are in this country is because our government has complete control over our money. But if we take the control of the money away from them and we control the money, then we can be like, hey, you know, we'll do this if you do that. Like, you know, because if there's no dollar to send to the government, they're not going to spend $750 billion a year on war because they're not going to have it.
Right.
So this is a way for us to take back the power of the currency, because those who hold the currency hold the power.
I did a video this week that I released over the weekend about Afghanistan and how Bitcoin really could have probably prevented us from ever going to war in Afghanistan. And it may also prevent all future wars. Like, imagine if the currency is in the hands of the people instead of all of these rich oligarchs. Imagine how different things would be. It'd almost be like a Star Trek existence, wouldn't it? I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm throwing it out there. But imagine if the people's currency, people had access to this currency, and it's empowering, it's, you know, it's enriching. All of these third world countries now are allowing people to use cryptocurrency as a legal tender. Imagine what's going to happen when these poor countries maybe aren't so poor anymore. And they're not a third world country, and they become a first world country. And the United States becomes a third world country because we're $28 trillion in debt. Imagine how, wouldn't that be an interesting sort of, what was that, that Amazon Prime series, where it was like, if the Nazis had won, and it was like three or four seasons on Amazon Prime called like Man in a Castle, High Castle or something like that.
I never saw that. Never even saw it either for that. That sounds interesting though.
Yeah. I want to go back and watch it because I think they're either on season three or four and it's supposed to be really, really good. And it's one of those ones that I missed, but, I think it's called Man in a High Castle. And it's about how, like, I think the Nazis won and they divided the United States in half. And it was all this, I don't know. So imagine like that. Imagine if like the United States is the collapsing entity and all of these third world countries are now rise because of cryptocurrency.
And the thing is that a lot of people don't realize is our dollar is only being held together by a thread. I mean, it is literally it's so volatile that at any moment it could collapse because of the way it's just spread so thin.
Yeah, I have a video. Like I said, I'm going to be releasing a video later today, putting a lot of work into it on the warning signs that I am seeing right now in the market in the US dollar. And this isn't like a how I'm feeling video. No, this is looking at the credit market. We're going to be looking at a whole bunch of things that the Fed is doing and the balance sheets. And there's a whole bunch of data that I've been pouring through this weekend. So I'm going to put that video together today. Make sure you're a subscriber of the channel and turn on that bell notification so you'll be notified later today when I release that video. Maybe we'll do it as a premiere. We will all hang out in the chat. We'll have a conversation about it. I'd love to get your take on that. So we got more news to get to you here on the show. Talked about Bitcoin. We talked about the stimulus. I want to talk about billionaires suffering. You know, billionaires really want you to know that they are in pain and they're languishing right now. So we'll get to that in a second.
Let me see if I can dolge up some really sad trombone. Yeah, really nice music here for them. I know I have some.
So we'll get to that in a second while you pull that up. But I want to tell you about our friends over at HelloFresh. Do you know that HelloFresh has become, speaking about like expensive groceries and our federal government not doing anything to help us, that's where HelloFresh comes in because they're incredibly affordable prices where you're saving upwards of 30% off of your grocery store bill by using HelloFresh. Right. And you can even measure this pound for pound, meat, vegetables, everything. You're going to save 30% and have it delivered right to your door in pre-measured ingredients with recipe cards for you to prepare your dinners for your family. Why would you want to go to the grocery store, pay 30% more and not get good, like delicious recipes that are already figured out for you and take you about 30 minutes to make, right? It's a no-brainer. And they've got delicious recipes that they rotate through that you can pick from. They have vegetarian options. They have pescatarian options. They have larger family, smaller family sizes, and you can pick and choose what you want. And you can have it consistently showing up on a regular basis right to your door. Pork sausage spaghetti bolognese is one of my favorites with zucchini ribbons. Oh, look at that. And Parmesan. Yeah, have that delivered right to your door. And you're not wasting anything because it's exactly what you need. And you can, we love working with the kids with it. Kids got their aprons now that we have their own kids' aprons and they've been cooking. And it's great. They get the recipe cards. It's easy to follow. You can have your meal on the plate in like 30 minutes. Really, really love it. So go to HelloFresh.com. If you want to get 14 free meals right now, that's right, 14 free meals. So all you need to do is go to HelloFresh.com/invest14 and use the code INVEST14 to get up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. Yeah, America's number one meal kit is giving you 14 free meals. Just try them. Give them a try, and you will fall in love with them. 14 free meals. We are huge fans of HelloFresh. All right, let's talk about these landlords. So, you know, things are really tough these days for millionaires and billionaires. I don't know if you've been following the news. I mean, just look at the headlines that we've been seeing out there. I mean, all of these billionaires that are just suffering. Nearly 500 people became billionaires during the pandemic year. Oh, that's so sad. The billionaire boom, how the super rich soaked up COVID cash. Could I get a sad violin? Billionaires got 54% richer during the pandemic. Oh, look at these guys. They became so rich. And meanwhile, this is all happening on a backdrop of homelessness, you know, across the country. Homelessness, despair, evictions, not to mention, you know, and which are set to explode in September, right? How many of you right now watching know somebody who's been evicted or you face eviction yourself or you are behind on your bills for mortgages or rent? Let me know in the chat right now. Well, turns out things have gotten really bad for one landlord. His name is Julio Gonzalez. Yeah, Julio Gonzalez. And here he is. Here's Julio Gonzalez. Here he is. I'm a landlord with 24 properties. We're suffering during Biden's eviction ban, he writes in this article for Business Insider. And no one is helping me. This is the same guy, by the way, who I interviewed a few years ago. He told me that he was the person responsible for lobbying President Trump so that real estate investors would get a huge payday during the Trump tax cuts. He was there in Washington meeting with Treasury. He was there in Washington meeting with Trump, meeting with these guys, and he was responsible. He told me, he said, if I wasn't there, he was so proud of himself. If I wasn't there, real estate investors wouldn't have got the cuts that we got. And he was right. He made off like a bandit. I mean, he did really well, right? So this billionaire, Julio Gonzalez, is now crying because the recently extended federal eviction moratorium is causing him and his rental property business to suffer. So he pens this piece, you know, right to this. I basically penned it, but spoke with a reporter, I guess, for this piece. And now on the surface, you might say, hey, Clayton, well, he is a landlord and he's losing money and his tenants can't pay rent. So perhaps we should feel sorry for him. You know, you might say that. So let's just dig a little deeper. Like, how exactly is this eviction moratorium hurting this billionaire who has a private jet, by the way?
Doesn't seem to be hurting his watch either.
Yeah, look at that watch. I didn't even see that. I mean, I just love this idea that you, like, you fly, you know, you're suffering and you literally pose next to your private jet for the news article, right? Like, we should really feel bad for him. Like any small businessman who owns his own website proclaims him to be truly the nation's forefather of specialty tax services. Mr. Gonzalez is just having a really tough time making ends meet. His 24 property side hustle, I guess, isn't working so much, right? Tracy says, my landlord went up on the rent on my townhome twice during the pandemic, November 2020 and the upcoming November 2021. So decided to raise rent during a pandemic. Well, he doesn't talk about how much his apparent thriving tax consulting business is doing during this particular article. Gonzalez notes that of the 24 properties, 20 are residential. And Joe Biden's eviction moratorium is driving him to near discomfort because four of his tenants are taking advantage of the federally mandated eviction moratorium. So he writes this. The moratoriums have led to a significant and negative effect in profitability for me. Play the sad violin, yeah. It's been a 15% loss in profit. Residents are not paying rent. And essentially, this is leading to rent-free living for me. I can't take it. I can't take it anymore. Oh, my landlord's residence not paying rent essentially leads to free living, while landlords still have to pay for taxes, utilities, and more. It's just tough. My parents came to America from Cuba, and I grew up with nothing. I've worked hard to be successful, so I know what it's like to face challenges. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's okay, man. It's okay.
To be clear, I just want to be clear. I lost 15% of my profits. Not income. Just my profits. It's just my profits. Sorry. Get a box of tissues. He has the balls, literally the balls, to say, I lost 15% of my profits, not even my income. Like, it's not a 15% cut in his income, it's 15% profits. He said so much so that, you know what, we haven't been able to do additional improvements on the buildings. This is really hampering our style, basically. So let me set this straight for you as a real estate investor. What he's basically saying is the profits that we would be getting, we can't then offset those profits with additional improvements on the property because of the tax benefits. Like, we can't also then take those additional profits because and use them to our tax benefit. That's really what it comes down to. Weirdly, though, nowhere in his catalog of misery does Gonzalez mention whether he or his renters have applied for federal emergency rental assistance program that's supposed to help both landlords and tenants. He, after all, is such cushy friends with members of the administrations. He couldn't just go under Trump and ask for the federal eviction and mortgage support that is available for all of these rich landlords that are taking advantage of it.
He doesn't have time for that. He's over in Barbados or somewhere like that. He doesn't come back here and deal with paperwork and all that stuff. He just wants to stay over where he's at and on his private jet. And
he's got his private jet to fly.
Yeah, he's not going to come back here and do paperwork.
Oh, my God. I love these guys. And also, what's funny is that this article was originally published in Business Insider, and it was basically almost like I'm writing this article, like almost like a sponsored article that it seems like he wrote or something. Like he verbalized it to a writer who just like regurgitated it. So because of the pushback from the initial photo that they used for the, I'm a landlord with 24 properties. We're suffering during Biden's eviction ban. Here I am in front of my private jet. No one's helping me. They switched the photo. In the article, they switched it to this photo, which is somehow better, in his corporate office building.
Jeez.
So they switched the photo. They switched it out.
You would think with that kind of money, you could afford a real-looking toupee.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's, oh, man.
I don't wear a toupee.
That's one of my wife's, she can't stand that. Just use your real hair, because she always spots them. She's like, no one's buying that hair color. Come on. Like, you're that age and that hair color should not be on your head. Just is not real. Come on.
If I were a billionaire and I had to do a toupee, it would cover my entire face and it would look real.
You do like Teen Wolf.
I'd be like Teen Wolf and it would look real. Like, people would be like, holy cow, you got a lot of hair. Like, pull on it. Yep. Ow, ow, ow.
Are there such thing as toupee beards? Like, do people put like...
I'm sure there are. Yeah, there's got to be.
Oh, man, that's unbelievable. So, I mean, we should really feel sad for these billionaires. These billionaires are suffering, they're really, really in pain right now. So I think we should all feel badly for them. Don't you? I'm really sad for these guys. I feel really sad.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel really sad.
Just one more.
I'm sorry.
Let's pay tribute.
My 24 properties. And only four of my tenants aren't paying.
Ugh, the nerve.
What's that noise? Oh, okay, the jet is ready. Okay, I have to go to lunch in Paris. I'll finish this conversation when I get back, okay?
However, you know that if you go to lunch in the States, you get the 3 margarita deal. I don't think you get that in Paris.
No, I don't think you get that. You don't get that benefit there. Linda, you have to go back and watch the beginning for stimulus. We have chapters we add to the show. So we're live here every day, 7 a.m. or 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. Join us 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe. We do the show every day, 8:30 in the morning, covering the stories you will not see on the mainstream media, on the laughable, horrible networks, the billionaire run news networks.
You're cracking me up.
Thank you, CNN. Thank you for your support. You're going to need it after this next segment. Oh, CNN. You're back in my heart. What is that Rod Stewart song? Like, you're in my heart. You're in my soul.
You're in my bed when I grow. What is that?
Is that Maggie May? No, that's not Maggie May.
No, because that's Wake Up Maggie, I think.
Yeah. So CNN sucks. And so do all. Let's just cut right to the chase. And most of the mainstream media news organizations are just, they're just run by billionaires, and they're just spoon feeding you a cacophony of warmongering narratives about how Biden is awful. This is a disaster. We should still be in Afghanistan. This is Biden's mess. His approval rating is going down. Meanwhile, I like to think that when all of the media is telling you a big bowl of lies like that, that maybe Biden has actually done the right thing. And I have been a staunch supporter of him during this. He did the hard thing and got out of Afghanistan, a 20-year war that was unwinnable from the beginning. Who we should be talking about in all of this is George W. Bush and his merry band of warmongers who got us into this mess in the first place. And Obama, who didn't get us out, who was worried about his appearance on television and not getting us out of Afghanistan. And Trump, who actually set in motion the move to get us out of Afghanistan, but didn't actually follow through with it. And now is pretending like this plan that we're seeing unfolding before our eyes wasn't his, as if this was Biden's plan. So, but Biden actually executed on it and got us out of there. But CNN can't handle it, and the mainstream media can't handle it, because every segment you see on in the newspaper, online, on CNN, on Fox, on MSNBC is about what a disaster this is and how the warmongers, you know, they want us back in there. Let's bring in retired general blah, blah, blah to get his perspective on this, who's on our payroll now here at CNN. So CNN had the audacity this weekend to do a segment about how the media has been handling Afghanistan. So during an appearance on CNN, former White House advisor Matthew Dowd and columnist Amanya Markotti criticized the media coverage of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan as being over the top. And the coverage, I mean, and they talk about the coverage being way over the top. Just watch this interaction on CNN. It was actually a really remarkable moment. And I can't believe that they actually did this segment. And it was like critique right in their face. Watch.
So, Matthew Dowd. You would describe the media's coverage this week as what?
Way over the top and unconnected to a perspective on the issue from the beginning. They've added more perspective in the final days, but from the beginning, they didn't have a perspective on it. My sense of this is Joe Biden has done, we should judge it by the data of what's happened and not by anecdotes. And sometimes the president of the press has a tendency to judge things by anecdotes and not the data. And the data for the last week shows Joe Biden has basically gotten 30,000 people out of Afghanistan without a single loss of an American life.
So how do we challenge that? Well, that goes against my narrative here at CNN. You know, at CNN, we make our money off of war. Right. We've got right. We have a whole show called The Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, which is a mock-up of the idea of being in a war situation room. Right. Welcome to The Situation Room. Our top story today. You know, we go to Kabul, which is like the fall of Saigon. War. Remember the first Iraq war? And that's the thing that put CNN really on the map.
Sure. Brian, after the show, he's going to the back of the back room or whatever. And he's like, is anybody vetting my guests anymore? Are you guys vetting these people?
You're cracking me up.
Exactly, Brian. So he says the coverage was way over the top, Matthew Dowd says, and unconnected to a perspective on the issue from the beginning. They've added more perspective in the final days, but from the beginning, they didn't have perspective on it. So ending a war. Well, what does Brian think about this? He's like, I don't believe you. I know who butters my bread here at CNN. Let me see if I go along with that. I don't know if I go along with that kind of coverage.
Amanda, what's your critique of the coverage?
I agree. It's been over the top. I think that...
Wait a minute. Two guests on my show that think that CNN's coverage and all has all been over the top? What's going on here?
We were reminded of the factors that got us into some of the wars and to begin with, which is there tends to be a bias in the press towards military intervention.
Did you hear that? A really astute thing that she just said. There tends to be bias in the media towards military intervention. Why? Why? Ask yourself why. When you see this type of coverage, ask yourself why. It's the money. It's the money, right? It's the money that comes from these billionaires, funneled to these billionaires, continuing and perpetuating a cycle of billionaires. That's what it does. Warmongers.
And I think that we also see why it was so hard for presidents in the past to pull out of Afghanistan. They were afraid of exactly this kind of press overreaction. There's no way to surrender, leave, withdraw, whatever you want to call it, in a war without things getting ugly. And I feel there was something Pollyannish about expecting anything different, and it disappoints me that the press is behaving in this way.
Wow. Like, you guys should be ashamed of yourselves. You, CNN, of all people.
And how many people know what she means when she says Pollyannish? I would say not very many young people.
Yeah, what do you... Break it down for us.
Pollyanna, that's Disney. Remember mm-hmm. Pollyanna, the really... Pollyanna, I think it was. The really innocent Disney character show, movie.
Right. Acting as if... If anyone has like a straight definition of Pollyanna, and like the, if there's like some sort of a, you know,
I'm looking up Pollyannish, often written in lowercase as Pollyannish, means unrealistically optimistic. If someone is acting Pollyannish, they are judged as showing an optimism that is extremely naive and unthinking. Pollyannish is based on Pollyanna, a term for an excessively optimistic person. So that, and that was also the name of a Disney movie. I thought she was like using some kind of Disney reference.
No, but you, I mean, that's exactly what Pollyannish means. Yeah, what yeah. you said is just this overly optimistic, like everything is great. It's always great.
But Amanda, the role of the press is to challenge the government.
Oh, really? The role of the press is to challenge the government. Oh, really?
Which we never do here.
Is that really what you do? You challenge the government? Really?
Aren't these reporters just doing their jobs, challenging the people in authority, saying, why did this go so badly? Yes, you know, you withdrew, but why was it executed so badly?
I feel like accountability works better if it's in good faith or if it's rooted in something that's factual. I think.
Damn. Damn, girl. Oh, man, she did not. If it's based in something factual. Yeah, and accountability goes both ways.
You know, there's not been accountability for 20 years for staying in Afghanistan.
What? Right. Where's that? Where's that coverage have been? Where's that coverage?
Over and over and over again, presidents have actually been rewarded for the bad decision of staying in Afghanistan by a press that kind of leans towards not ever wanting to see the ugly images of what leaving would look like. So, you know, accountability is good, but what we have is a problem of failure of accountability for about 20 years now.
Ouch.
You know what? It's so funny because generally they'll have like one person that's completely on the right, one that's on the left, and they kind of like argue and they kind of push the other person. But very rare do you have two people that come on and agree on the negative of what CNN is trying to hide. You know what I mean? Like, this yeah. is awesome. And, it's, well, and what's also sad is that this is actually news to us. Like, wow, this is so rare. This never happens.
Right. Like, oh my gosh, this is so rare. I have to do a whole segment on it, you know, on the show today about CNN, like actually had people on the air tell the truth. But Brian's question about, well, isn't this the job of the reporters to push back? He's conflating actual journalism with his network. Let's be clear, right? A reporter who's embedded in Afghanistan and is protected by the U.S. military, right? When you're embedded, you're in bed. You're in bed. Let's be honest. Well, you're there.
That would have been
the military protects you the whole time.
That would have been my question to Brian. If he would have posed that question to me, I'd have been like, yeah, so when are you going to start doing that?
Right. Exactly. When are you going to start actually doing journalism? Because what we're talking about with these reporters, what these two people on his air are talking about, isn't about the journalists who are embedded with these soldiers and so forth. Like, that's one piece of it. No, what they're talking about is the 24-hour wall-to-wall news anchor coverage of these fat slobs sitting there on their news anchor desks, getting their big cushy salaries and reporting that this is a disaster and that this should have been better constructed and we should be staying there and I'm going to have this retired general on my air and nonstop coverage of how horrible this has been, propaganda pushing it into our brains that we should be staying there. And good for Biden for not listening to it. You know, good for Biden for like saying, you know what? Hey, maybe I'm 82. I don't know how old he is. You know, if this is going to be my legacy that I ended this war and I got out of here and it's on my watch, fine. And, you know, we don't know all the machinations of it yet. You know, he may end up just continuing the war just via, you know, drones for the next 20 years, bombing innocent people. We'll see. But for the most part, this whole media conflagration is way overblown and ridiculous. So Matthew goes on.
That's very interesting.
That's interesting.
He's just wow. like so dumbfounded.
Wow,
like,
I can't believe you would you would criticize me.
Towards not ever wanting to see the ugly images of what leaving would look like. So, you know, accountability is good, but what we have is a problem of failure of accountability for about 20 years now.
That's very interesting. Doubt, how does
that? I clearly don't appreciate that talk on my air. I don't like anyone saying bad things about us here at CNN. We always cover war. We're funded by war.
Does that ring with you, given your relationship with George W. Bush back in the 2000s?
Well, I mean, to me, I've been a critic of Joe Biden on a number of different things, so it's not like I'm some cheerleader of Joe Biden. I'm just trying to look at this from my perspective of this. George W. Bush is the one who should be lambasted the most in this coverage. That's who should be lambasted the most. The original sin of the problem we're seeing unfolding and everything that's happened in 20 years is at his doorstep. Now, Barack Obama should have done something about it.
By the way, Matthew Dowd used to work for Bush. He was an advisor to Bush Cheney, remember.
And that's probably what was their gamble. They're like, this guy worked for Bush. He's going to be all about the war.
Yeah, he's going to say this was a disaster. You know, we should absolutely stick it out and help these people get out of here, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes on and says, Biden got 30,000 people out of there quietly, and no one has died as a result of it. Like, America saved and brought out of there during this evacuation. He worked for Bush and Cheney, and he's standing here saying that all of the criticism should be against Bush and Cheney, lobbed right at their feet.
What the American people wanted the troops withdrawn then, he didn't because he was, as was just said by Amanda, he was afraid of exactly what's happening here. Mm-hmm. I actually agreed with Donald Trump on this when he announced he was going to withdraw from Afghanistan. How he went about it, I disagreed, but I agreed with the idea of getting out of Afghanistan. But I think the press, again, does not cover this with perspective. And the idea, one other thing, Brian, the voices they're putting on the air are all the voices that got it wrong from day one. All of the voices they're having on the air criticizing most.
Look at Brian's face. He's like, I can't.
Oh my gosh, no. He's talking about our generals and our war contractors. Shut up.
You mean all the generals and people that we have now on our payroll who are former Bush advisor, former this, former that, former general this, former that, former NATO allied commander, former that. They're all wrong. They're all warmongers and they all wanted this perpetual war. And we've had them on our air for the past 2 weeks nonstop, ad nauseum here at MSNBC, CNN, everywhere else.
Really?
Watch his face. I just love his face in this. Sorry. Anyway.
Let's not cover this with perspective. And the idea, one other thing, Brian, the voices they're putting on the air are all the voices that got it wrong from day one. All of the voices they're having on the air criticizing, most of them, criticizing Joe Biden are all the ones that got it.
It's like Scooby-Doo.
Wrong for the last 20 years. Leon Panetta, George W. Bush, he hasn't been on the air, but people around him, all of them got it wrong. So why would we listen to them related to the pullout?
And she's over on the right-hand side just nodding her head with everything that he says. Yep, yep. And Brian's in the middle just like, oh.
I'm surprised he didn't just give it, like, you know, when he takes this criticism, he, you know, he just laughs it off like this. You're just full of it.
Yeah.
You're cracking me up.
Yeah. Yeah. So sorry to share the truth. Drop me a comment below. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Is the mainstream media getting it right? Please drop me a comment. And also, I should mention, subscribe to our channel. It's very easy to do. Just hit the subscribe button. We're here every day for content, Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. We also have our free daily newsletter.
Yeah.
Yes. I always forget to mention our daily newsletter. Grab it. Just go to morninginvest.com. It's totally free. We cover the stories so you can read them over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning. And it's delivered to your inbox via email. Very easy to do. And just when you get the welcome email from me, just say, hey, Clayton, I got it. Let me know you received it because it comes from my email. And drag it over to your VIP or your inbox so that you won't miss our newsletter the next day when we publish it.
We're sorry, billionaires. We're so sorry.
It's been rough for you and your private jets.
It has definitely been rough.
Don't cry. Don't cry. Peace out, everyone.
Goodbye, everybody. Have a great weekend. Just kidding. See you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.